Why don't you guys welcome Jaya and Catherine Wolf as they come to join us today. Welcome, guys.
Hi. Oh, hello. Okay, woohoo, I'm on.
Hi. Morning, hi.
Hey, sorry, no Ashton Kutcher, but Catherine and Jay Wolf are here today. We're so glad to be here with y'all.
Hey, I saw him up close. Ashton Kutcher doesn't have anything on Jay. He's
Oh, we spoke at Passion Conference, and the number one takeaway, I'm not kidding, was like all over Twitter, Instagram, Jay Wolf, Mark Ruffalo next to each other, was the big meme. And we're like, that was the takeaway, but I kind of love that. But Mark Ruffalo is, I mean,
it's better than skinny or Jack Black, which I was one time called that in college, which is not a compliment.
Amazing. Anyway. So we've been in this series called Don't Waste Your Life, and what an incredible way for our house to start a new year. And in the series, we had been planning from the very beginning to do a message called Don't Waste Your Pain. And the reason why is because all of us go through loss. There's not a person sitting in this room right now that hasn't been through loss, loss of a loved one, loss of a career, loss of a dream, loss of a relationship. And we find ourselves in difficult places in life. And so the question is, what do you do with all the suffering, with all the tears, with all the pain, with all the hardship? We can either throw that all away, or we can use that for a greater purpose. And so as we got closer to this particular part of the series, we thought, you know, we met these guys at Passion. I actually came to know them through the Stanfills, and Christian and Carrie knew you guys at college.
Woohoo! Oh, yeah, Stanford.
And they made sure that when your book was coming out that I got an early copy of the manuscript, and so that's how we met. Then Shelley became friends with you guys before me.
At this gathering last year, woohoo.
And so Shelley was like, you know, these guys have got to come to Passion. And no kidding, if you were there, I say it this way, all the messages at Passion were like a bundle of arrows flying the same direction. That's what I loved about it. Wasn't this speaker kind of great message, next speaker, another message, great message, but another great message. All the messages were like an arrow going one direction, but your story was the twine that bound all those arrows together and made them all sort of fit into our lives. And so these guys have flown all the way across America from the LA area to be with us all day today at Passion City Church. So welcome, guys. We're so glad that you're here.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Jay, why don't you just take off? A lot of people know you. A lot of people don't know you. There's been a lot of buzz about you guys being here. Tell us, like, Jay and Catherine's story in a nutshell, and how we got to where we are today.
Sure. So we are originally from the South, so it's what a gift to get to be here in Atlanta with you, but also sort of in our neck of the woods. You know, it's so good to get to kind of come home. I'm from Montgomery originally, Catherine's from Athens, Georgia. And as she referenced, good, yeah. We went to Samford University in Birmingham. I guess nobody went to Samford because it's crickets, no. So oh well.
No, there wasn't a big shout out for the Bulldogs.
No shout out. It's a great school, anyway. So that's where we met. We got married right after college in 2004. And that's us. I'm so glad we have pictures of that, because we look nothing like that now. You know what I mean? It's just, we're all aging. Thank God we have pictures. That is us, though. And we went from that picture literally just a few weeks after, moved to LA on this great adventure of our life. And didn't know anybody. I was going to go to Pepperdine Law School. Catherine was doing some stuff in the entertainment industry. And God just brought us to that place. And we found this fantastic church, Bel Air Pres Church. Then fast forward a few years, my last year of law school, we had a baby even, James, who is actually in your kids program right now. And when he was 6 months old, just a few weeks before I graduated law school, Catherine suffered a massive stroke. And it was a situation... maybe like you've experienced, where just one day, you know, you have this picture of your life and what it's going to be and your future and even maybe what the day is going to look like, and all of a sudden it's hanging by a thread and everything's turned upside down, everything's falling apart. And that, for us, happened April 21st, 2008. And Catherine was rushed to UCLA. It was very unlikely she would even survive the surgery if they could even try it. sort of the worst case scenario, the biggest sort of malformation that was rupturing and the pressure was squeezing down her brain into her spinal column, and it was pretty unsurvivable. And yet our church family showed up and continued to show up, and God, in his mercy, for some reason that day, spared Catherine's life and set us off into this new life and this new normal and this second chance of life that has been harder than we ever could have thought, but it's been better than we ever could have imagined. And that's God at work. It makes no sense otherwise, but God has given us a second chance to be a couple, to be a family, to use our life as a vessel that showcases him to the world, to people in need, and that has become the calling on our lives. I was a lawyer, you know, by training, and by the loans I'm repaying, and yeah, God has given us a new vision for what he wants to do in our suffering as we sort of embody that to different people going through different kinds of pain. So that's why we're here today. And again, I do have to say really quick, what a beautiful full circle moment for us it was a couple weeks ago and even today, because passion, as it has a way of doing in this world, has changed so many lives, including our own. And this is a humble thank you that we get to just say we are grateful for what you're fueling into this world. The work of God through this ministry has changed our lives.
It truly has.
Thank you.
It's changed our story. I wanted to add that I think it's so important to let everybody know that we are sharing our hope in Jesus, not once we came to this miraculous, healing and everything's so much better now, and that's where we share from, is the place of, well, we've been through that. We emerge from the car wreck anew, but instead it's like, I'm pretty messed up still, and that's part of what's so powerful in all of our stories, is that not okay thing that transforms lives. When we show my hand doesn't work, and I can't walk, and my face is paralyzed, and I'm half blind, blah, 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 all these problems, what it's really doing is being the medium. That's our message that shows, like, we got some significant brokenness in all of our stories, and pretending that we, like, are perfect, it actually doesn't reach anyone anyway. But it's in this, like, brokenness, in my special seat, that I get to proclaim the goodness of God. And that actually is what moves people. Right. Oh, don't fly out, really.
Catherine and Jay are going to tell you a lot today, don't clap. And when they say that, just clap more whenever they say that. So, Catherine, you obviously woke up into this story. You were in a coma for quite some time, and then you woke up one day. What was that like?
Right. It was unimaginable. I mean, your entire life's been turned upside down. I was a perfectly normal, perfectly healthy, didn't even have a doctor. We weren't sure if we had insurance. Thankfully, we did. I just had a baby 6 months before, and I mean, I'm no medical history, nothing. And then the next day, in my mind, I'm laying in a hospital bed, severely disabled, hooked up to a tube in my stomach they feed me from. I had a ventilator to breathe. I can't speak. And so my entire life's been turned completely upside down, and I can't even really catch on. And I think, thankfully, the goodness of God was actually that I wasn't fully able to wrap my mind around it. One, it was so horrible, I don't know if I could have stayed on earth. But also, I think there was this fog that, kept me from totally despairing. I just knew there was hope somehow through the fog. I knew that God was at work, and it got really hard and messy from there. But initially, things were so bad, there was nowhere to look but up, pretty much. It was rock bottom. And even though my body was so messed up, and I couldn't eat food, and I couldn't speak even, I couldn't see, nothing, they would bring my baby into the room every day. Various friends and family would, you know, take turns bringing in for like a viewing of mommy. And I had been exclusively breastfeeding my sweet baby For the 6 months of his life, he'd never been apart from me for hardly a moment. And he would come in and we'd have like 20 minutes together and they'd take him out. And it's so tragic to tell you that during those 20 minutes, my brain hadn't caught on yet that I couldn't feed him anymore. So I would obsess for those 20 minutes of how to feed him and how to modestly move things around in the hospital bed and be able to feed him. And then they'd say, you know, it's time for James to go eat. And it took months to even understand that I didn't do that anymore. And the other people were taking care of my baby. And that was the worst thing of any of it, was thinking, I'm not going to be mommy anymore, and will I ever be again? It's terrible, terrible.
So you guys had a lot of lows. Took you a long time to begin to recover, to be able to talk, to be able to swallow. Was a giant mountain to go over, and still is. To learn to stand again, to walk again. Tell us, Jay, just about a few of the places where you thought, I don't know if we're going to make it through this whole thing.
Yeah. Well, we went from the hospital setting. Catherine was in the ICU for 40 days. And I have to say there were glimpses, and there's always glimpses of God working if we have eyes to see it. Just because he's silent doesn't mean he's abandoned us. Mm-hmm. And I think we would see him speaking to us through things like Catherine being in ICU on life support for 40 days, not 39 or 41, but 40 days. Mm. You know, this glimpse that he is leading us through the wilderness. And yet, you know, we transitioned to a brain rehab, and what was hard is it was out of our community of LA, you know, our church body that had loved us so well. But Catherine had to go there. You know, sometimes we'd almost rather stay in the ICU because it's comfortable, ironically. And God's calling us out of these places of safety to places of recovery and healing, but sometimes it's so unknown and it's so scary and it's so hurtful. And for us, that season was brain rehab, where literally there was people who were dying. They were so sick that were in Catherine's therapy group. I mean, literally dying during therapy. And so we're witnessing not only that, but people who have lost their cognitive abilities, their emotional abilities. Several people who were so raging inside that it came out on all of us, and it was just a place of darkness spiritually. And so there were times then that it really felt like, God, could this be the sort of community? You know, the juxtaposition is so painful to see. We were in the, you know, the law school wives on the beach with the babies, and now we're literally in brain rehab with this new peer group. But God continued to show us sort of the people in front of us, the people nobody else is able to reach. You know, the grown men literally quadriplegic with their aging parents sitting next to them as they're weeping that they can't even kill themselves if they wanted to. Mm. And that these are the people who God says, that's him. I want you to go tell him that this isn't the end. And yet God brought us out of that almost 2 years in hospital and rehab settings to then be able to go back to our community in LA. And you know, you think often when you've been through hard stuff that you get to sort of check that off the bucket list, you know, like the suffering box, and then you can go on to the vacations and sort of the dreams and everything else. And it was something we quickly realized that the fall when we had moved back to home, to LA, to our community and friends, when our doctor, the neurosurgeon who helped save Catherine's life, came into the exam room and he was crying. And of course, it's not great when your doctor cries when he tells you some news about your health. And so he said, you have an aneurysm behind your good eye. And I'm so sorry, because I can't even begin to tell you how painful this is for me, says her neurosurgeon. And I remember in that moment, we thought, God, at least the brain stuff you take off the table. And I think that day and then to this day, God says, do you really want me? Or do you just want what you think I'm going to give you? You know, do you want the gifts or do you want the giver? Like, do you just want to not hurt anymore? Do you want me to deliver you from this pain you think that you don't deserve to be going through? Or do you want the deliverer of all the hope in the world in me? That's what he's asking every day. And that's what he's asking of you today, too. We stand at this crossroads together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You wrote in the book, the book's amazing because you write some, and Catherine writes some, and so you hear both perspectives. You wrote
I wrote a lot less, Louis, by the way. The word count has got to be almost half. Thankfully, Jay Wolf's the writer.
No. You Sorry, wrote go ahead. Something so powerful. Jay, you said, as we progressed through all the pain together and found God in the midst, we were surprised to find that our hearts did not have to shrink in self-defense. Rather, as our hearts were filled to overflowing with the comfort we so desperately needed, our burgeoning hope could spill out onto those in need. We who were the receivers became the givers. And in so giving, this is the part that I want you to talk about for a minute. And in so giving, we were continually refilled and encouraged by the realization that none of our suffering would be wasted.
You know, I think in that waiting room at UCLA Hospital, this tattered old waiting room, it was quickly the most holy experience of our lives. As God spared Catherine's life, as we were sort of petitioning, 100 people gathered the night of her surgery. But then what was really pretty profound, and it was a turning point in my life, in this new life, was to sit next to other people in that same waiting room, because we'd be waiting there for months, you know. Other people going through the worst day of their life. And instead of just sort of turning a blind eye like we all do, and it's understandable, isn't it? We've all got enough pain. Everything in us says, why would you add somebody else's pain? You've already got enough.
Right.
But there was this sense of opening ourselves up and saying, when we all shoulder each other's pain, the load is lightened. You know, Christ says, the burden is light with me. Mm-hmm. And that's because we're all shouldering each other's pain together. Mm-hmm. That's the point of it. But it's something that we so rarely want to do because we feel we're justified to go inside when we're hurting, right? And yet God has given us this sort of sense of what he's given us in the comfort and in the hope we received, like Paul says in 2 Corinthians, is not just so we can be comfortable, not just so we can feel better about our own situation and our own pain, but that we can now give it away. And that maybe is even more counterintuitive or counter to our nature than anything, is to give away the precious things that we've been given, right? Mm-hmm. But God says, what I'm going to do is I'm going to then fill you back up in the giving. It's a cycle. And so now you get to hope it forward. And you get to go back to those brain rehabs, and I know you don't want to go there, but because I've taken you out of them, you get to tell the people who are on the brink of despair that this is not the end for them.
And you don't want to. You don't always want to do that. You can't unsee, though. Yeah. You can't have been there in brain rehabs or whatever it is where there are these people hurting so badly and not recognize, okay, Lord, there's something there for me. That God has uniquely wired me. I am now set apart and wired in my DNA now to go and see the people. You can't unsee them. So this summer, we're actually doing a Hope Heals family camp for families dealing with children or adults, actually, that are disabled. And many of them are like those people in the brain rehab that we wouldn't have wanted to know because it's so hard and messy. And God is saying, I have set you apart. Now this is where you go. And in there is such joy, it's unbelievable. It's like my whole life I was waiting to meet you. At the brain rehab we all have in our hearts. I was waiting there because I have to encourage you. I have to show you my joy because I want to, because I'm fueled by something that's not of this world. And I think all of us are so caught up, and not you, but others in the world are so caught up by this navel-gazing, this weird, myopic, like, self-focus. And, like, I mean, I love my life, and I'm in a wheelchair, and I have a very broken story, blah-bitty-blah. I love my life. It's wonderful. And don't clap. But that's for you all, too. Like, if you know Jesus, why are you, potentially, but hopefully not you, in such a bad mood all the time? Like, you have Jesus in your heart. You have joy of the Lord instilled in you. So go act like it. So the world wants to.
You know, it's interesting. I think I saw this on your Insta vid last night. Y'all were having a dance party in your hotel room.
That's right.
You're really excited that you got to Atlanta. And your
it
son,
took 10 hours to get
son,
here.
Your son, James, was jumping on the bed, and I think you were dancing. And
I can't. You want to see? Okay, hold on. So, I can dance really quick.
But the music was playing. You were dancing. James was jumping on the bed. And I thought, I know people who have a, quote, normal life that aren't as joyful about life as you are. And you have, quote, the abnormal life. So I'm wondering if maybe you have the normal life and other people have the
abnormal life. That's what I'm saying.
So I want you to talk for a minute because this is big. This is really big. A lot of us, knowingly or unknowingly, have come through a story of faith where we've linked together this idea. If you love God, you love Jesus, you follow God, he's going to bless you, and everything's going to go great for you. There's not going to be any hardship or suffering. God's just going to make life amazing for you. And yet here you are with an inverted story, and you're saying, no, we are in the middle of hardship and suffering. As far as we know, it's not going to change in this moment. God can do whatever he wants to do. And you see that. You said this is our new normal. So you're not looking at this as something's wrong with your life. You're looking at this as an opportunity for your life. Talk about how suffering and Jesus can fit together in the same faith.
I have to say, first off, one thing that fits with your question, but this is a picture of new life. And the honor to get to live it out when we meet a lot of people who are not getting to live out in the same way in their story. This new life together is the fuel. It's our overflow of praise and gratitude for this hard but good story. And I have to say really quick, the picture of our wedding, when I referenced us not looking the same, I just have to clarify, because I was talking about me. I think Catherine looks better than our wedding day. I'm serious. Yeah. She's always been beautiful, but new life is the most beautiful thing, I think, in the world. Mm. And the light of Christ in her is more beautiful than she ever was before. Really, I mean that. I just needed to clarify because my joke was
well, and Mark Ruffalo ain't got nothing on Jay Wolf. Let's be clear, please.
But, you know, yeah, we're so, thank you. We're so quick to, like I said, want to turn the other to sort of away from suffering. You know, but you all go to a place called Passion City Church. Maybe you heard of the Passion Conference. And the reality is passion means suffering. We hear the passion of the Christ, you know. Again, Suffering City Church may not have quite the draw in the Atlanta area, but I go to it. Actually. Anyway, you know, the reality is, like, we're anchored in something, in a God who leads the way beyond the veil. Hebrews 6:19 said we have this hope as an anchor for our souls, right? It's the transcendent thing when the storms of life come, when the suffering comes, whether outside or inside of us. There is something that gives us this assurance that we won't be taken down by it. Mm-hmm. We're founded on the rock. We are anchored in Christ who has gone before us. I have this picture of us holding onto the anchor chain as he just sort of takes it, not below the waves, but just beyond the sky. Mm. And yet, he is the forerunner. He's gone ahead, but he first went to the cross. And in John 16:33, he said, there's going to be trouble in this world, and trouble means that it's going to make you question everything, that you're going to think it's all going to fall apart. But then he says, you know the end. You know that I've gone ahead of you. I'm preparing a place for you. But I'm going to do something in your life that's going to be a blessing, that's going to be beyond anything you could imagine, but I'm not going to do it in spite of your suffering. I'm going to do it through it.
That's right. Come on.
Right in the middle of it. Tell about that.
Yeah, I love the thought that if my story were my story pre-stroke, then I could still be Catherine Wolf giving God the glory, which would be awesome. For sure. And side note, women, like, you're worthy. Everyone in this room, you're worthy. God made you in his image. And if you know Jesus, you have the glory of Jesus inside of you right now. Like, you've been rescued. You're awesome. Get over your angsty, sad, like, my life is so horrible and I'm worth nothing. No, you're incredible. God is in you. Back to what I'm saying, though. Suffering is this beautiful clarifying agent to where what suffering does for us all is take, like, so Catherine with free stroke, like, maybe I would have listened to her rantings and, you know, maybe I wouldn't have been interested. But, I mean, what's she really been through? But now it's like, oh, wow, like, it's a different deal. And I think that's a beautiful thing that suffering provides us, is this incredible platform. I love that Passion City is all about stewardship. So much of it is stewarding your story and stewarding everything in your life. Stewarding suffering is no different. The don't waste your pain thing that I said at Passion Conference that was based on, it's a long story, never mind, my baby handed me this Don't Waste Your Life book by John Piper the night before we left. Anyway, is the deep truth. Don't waste your pain. Like, use it. It's part of your story. And listen, get over it if it wasn't what you wanted. Life is what no one wants. No one has the perfect life. It doesn't exist. So we might as well take everything that God has given or that he's taken away, which both happen. Read Job. And what do? Use it for his glory, like steward it well, I think. Suffer well. That's a big thing, guys. Suffer well. You know why? Because it matters to Jesus. Sorry.
Amazing. I want to read a little bit about what you wrote, Catherine, because I think there are people in the room who can identify with this place. It was the day before Thanksgiving, and you were at a tough spot, and you said, I found myself wondering, has God made a mistake? Should I have died? I'm caught between life and death. I can't even walk or eat or play with my child. I've gone from making lasagna in my little kitchen to being fed all meals through a tube in my stomach. I've gone from going on play dates with girlfriends to attending courses on disability adjustment. I used to power walk the hills of Pepperdine. Now I have two physical therapists and a walker while I agonize for one step. But then something really, really amazing is on the next page. And tell us what happened in that moment and why it became such a pivotal moment for you.
You know, it's hard to exactly put into words what happened. But in my deepest, darkest moment of despair, which I love that you picked that out of the book, because that was a low moment. That's the moment I wondered, did God make a mistake? Should I have died? If I would have died or if I was dead, Jay could remarry. James could have a normal mommy. I don't fit here. I'm caught between life and death. I can't even eat or walk or speak. This can't be what God intended. This can't be my story. And I know some of you feel that way. And in that terrible moment, I was overwhelmed by the awakening of the scripture that I had known and believed since I was a small child. And I want to reiterate right in this moment, this was months after what happened to me. So if you do not feel this way in your nightmare right this moment, it can take a while. This was 6 months after. But I heard deep in my soul so many deep truths all at once, like crazy rapid fire. God was saying through the power of his word that I knew that not only am I not a mistake, God has in fact set me apart. This is unique. This is special. Most people will not have this kind of deal. You are now like deemed something awesome. And Psalm 139 is true. I was fearfully and wonderfully made in my mother's womb, which is where the ABM formed, and that was long ago. Romans 8:28, that all things were somehow working for God. Exodus 14:14, that I need only be still and know that he's God. And overall, there were so many verses, but the overarching one was Ephesians 4:1, that God was saying, I have called you to this special thing. Live a life worthy of the special calling that you have received. And that moment changed everything. Suddenly it wasn't, oh my gosh, I don't even know if I'm supposed to be here in this state. It was, I've got to live a life worthy of this. Oh my gosh, this is incredible. It literally lifted my head because it transformed my thinking of the situation. And that's what we all must do. We all must transform how we look at our situation. I heard recently that life is not what happens to us. Life is how we think about what happens to us. And the voice we hear in our head telling us it was this or that craziness, this sadness, or the lie we tell ourselves about what happened. Tell yourself the truth. And if you know in your heart Jesus Christ, the truth is pretty fabulous about your story. So get busy living into that reality. Take hold of that. Treasure it. Treasure the hard stuff, because somehow God is at work in it. And that is so fabulous. Sorry, go ahead.
I've heard you say, both of you, that some people are in a physical wheelchair, but everybody's got a wheelchair on the inside, and that there are no perfect stories. You talk about it, Catherine, about the bittersweet. What do you mean when you talk about life being both the bitter and the sweet?
Oh, this is so important for us. In the Western world, we've really, even in Christianity, American Christianity specifically, I believe, bought into the lie that to be good means it cannot be hard. They cannot coexist. That goodness is completely exclusive of anything that's not easy and perfect and comfortable. And that's a deep lie. And that's not just the prosperity gospel saying that. That's everywhere. I mean, not here, but lots of places, that the blessings will flow when we get back to that old life we had, when we get back to the blessing. No, this is the blessing. And it's radical upside down kingdom thinking, I think. But the reality is good and hard beautifully coexist, don't they? They're not remotely mutually exclusive, because good and hard are actually that bittersweet thing in life that makes it beautiful. We are trying so hard to instill in James, our 9-year-old, that James, God made you to do the hard things. And that's like a weird message to tell a child, because perhaps some of us experience in our lives the opposite message of, we got to protect you from the hard things, you sweet American little girl. But no, God made you to do the hard things. God has equipped you with what you need. It's so powerful. I love that.
Speaking of James, so he was 6 months old when all this happened, and thought maybe just be the three of you for a while, but something crazy happened recently.
Me again? I wish you were talking more. I'm always blabbering off, but I'll tell you. I have a bad situation. You may have noticed. I have a broken, disabled body. I'm on Medicare. I have osteoporosis, I have arthritis. I've had 11 surgeries since my stroke. Nothing works very well on my body. I got a lot of problems, chronic pain, throw it in there, it's everything. And after approval from multiple doctors, I was okay to get pregnant. And so summer 2015, I had a baby named John, and it's really special, because in a way, and it doesn't replace the suffering and the pain. I don't think anything does. But in a way, it's restoring some of the years the locusts have eaten in getting the second chance with baby John. Baby John's name is John Nestor.
Can I read that really quickly?
I would love that. And here's why it's John Nestor Wolf.
So I'll say real quickly, you know, again, God gives us the opportunity to live out, not death, but resurrection in our bodies. And we say that, and yet it means everything because it's calling us to die so that we can really live. And in our story, God has given us this new life. And so in all of our stories, if the new life hasn't come yet, it's not the end yet. You wait for the newness of life to come over you. That's what Christ is calling us to. That's what he sort of gave us in this little flesh and bones example of John, who's wild and amazing and crazy and gives us such life to our life right now.
And it's hard. Being a disabled mama is a hard deal.
That's right.
And it's awesome.
I just want to say really quickly, of course, we named him from the gospel writer John. John means the Lord has been gracious. And in John 9:3, there was a man that was born blind, and they said, "Who sinned?" And Jesus said, "Oh, he was blind so that the works of God could be displayed in his life." And that is our prayer over our John. And Nestor is named for Nestor Gonzalez, who was the doctor who did not one but two life-saving brain surgeries on Catherine. And so John Nestor, his middle name, is to honor Dr. Nestor Gonzalez, whose life's work has been giving second chances to patients like Catherine. The name Nestor means wisdom, remembrance, homecoming, and seeker of miracles.
Isn't that crazy?
And whenever, yeah.
I know.
Whenever somebody asks the origin of John's non-traditional name, he'll have a chance to tell his story. And in the telling of his story, like all of our stories, he will bear witness to light in the darkness, to life out of death, to a God who saved his mommy, and in so doing, saved him too.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
That's the work of...
Jay, I want you to...
That's the work of his life and our life.
Always in a situation, we just have a minute, but always in a situation like you guys find yourselves in, there's the patient, and a lot of times, a lot of the energy, the focus is all on the patient, and rightly so, but there's the other person, or persons, who selflessly give of themselves to serve and care and provide. And so I just want you to know that we see you and we celebrate your life and the beauty and the radiance that is Catherine Wolf. But I want you to know that we also see you and we celebrate a beautiful husband who has laid down his life to allow his wife to walk again into the life that God has prepared for her. And we honor you, Jay, for that sacrifice and that commitment. And I know a lot of times the focus is on Catherine, but I want you to know that we see you and honor you today. Mm-hmm. And in that same spirit, we see and honor every caregiver in this room today.
Uh-huh.
I've watched it up close for many, many years in my life, and it's one of the most powerful gospel things that you can ever see.
It is
when a person exchanges their whatever path to say, this is our path. And I wonder if you could take a minute and just speak encouragement over the caregivers that are sitting in the room right now.
Yeah. No, thank you. Thank you. I received that, and thank you. It's an encouragement. It's not the path I saw for my life, and yet it's such a gift to get to walk alongside Catherine, for her to know that she's not alone in this process. And that's what all of us, whether we're caregivers or whether we're just spouses or friends, is the gift we get to give each other, that we're not alone in pain. And yet as caregivers, there's a unique sort of ongoing, sort of endless seeming journey. And my prayer for myself and for you is that your heart would not grow hard in the midst of it, of giving yourself away, of feeling maybe unseen, of feeling that your needs are maybe not being met in the way you need for them to be met. But I think when we direct sort of what we give of ourselves, not to Catherine, but to God, like I can be present for her because Christ has been present for me, Like I can suffer with her because the compassion of Christ is what is compelling and giving life to what I have to offer her. So it's not by my strength or will. I'm not a hero. I very reluctantly sort of even accept that because I'm doing what I promised to do and what Christ has done for me. And so walk in that. It's not up to you. It's not up to your strength or will to sort of be there. But you can be present because Christ has been present for you. And I do say in one other point, you know, sometimes we show up in body. And that's a good thing to show up. But I pray and I think about the prodigal son, the brother, you know. I think, you know, the prodigal left. The brother stayed. But I think by his spirit, maybe he left in his heart a while before, right? So I don't want to just show up in my body but be gone in my spirit. And I say, God, let me be with my wife, not just in body, but in soul and in heart. And I pray that over you too. It's not an easy journey that you've been given, but it's your sacrifice of praise you get to give to God. Mm-hmm. And it's a good gift. And thank you for your work and your sacrifice. Thank you.
Amazing, man.